This is Radio Times. I'm Artie Moscow-Aim. If you're like the Radio Times staffers, myself included, you're always planning for or fantasizing about your next trip. And when we're in the throes of winter, those dreams can be even more vivid and alluring. So that's why we're going to talk about vacation getaways today on Radio Times. And often you have to take a plane to get from here to there. That's why we begin our conversation with Scott McCartney. He covers the airline industry for the Wall Street Journal. He writes a weekly column on airlines and travel called The Middle Seat, and he's the journal's travel editor. And Scott McCartney, nice to have you back with us on Radio Times.
Marty.
Yeah, good to have you with us. And to our listeners, lines open at 1-888-477-9499. Scott, let me begin with Boeing's new 787 Dreamliner. Three problems this week with three different planes, a problem with a braking system, a fuel leak, and a fire. Is Boeing in trouble?
I think this is, as far as we know, this is pretty typical problems for a new aircraft. New aircraft these days are incredibly complex. With the two major new aircraft we've seen in recent years, the 80 and the 787, there have been numerous problems. The fire in Boston is a serious concern. The NTSB is open to formal investigation. Fire on airplanes, obviously.
You know what, Scott? We're going
to take seriously.
All right, we're going to call you back because we are missing about half of the words that you're saying, and that just doesn't make it for a radio show. So let me recap here again, talking with Scott McCartney, and he covers the airline industry for the Wall Street Journal. Again, writes a weekly column on airlines and on travel called The Middle Seat, and he's the journal's travel editor. The first of two guests in this hour of Radio Times in about 15 minutes or so will be calling Don George, someone we call when we have cabin fever here at Radio Times. He's a travel writer, features editor at Gadling.com. And, of course, taking your questions and comments at 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. Beginning our conversation, talking about this Boeing 787 Dreamliner. It's a new design for aircraft. Its use of lighter material has been touted. Something good for the industry, something good for the company as well. But as Scott was telling us, there have been problems with a couple of these airliners this week. And do we have Scott back? I'm waiting. I need a thumbs up. Do we have Scott back? We do not. Okay. And again, I will just blather on here until we get him squared away. The industry has been having some positive news, but we're beginning with the Boeing 787 Dreamliner. And Scott, let's hope this is a better phone line. Nice to have you back with us on Radio Times.
Good to be back. I hope you can hear me.
You do. You sound much better. And we were talking about this Dreamliner and some of the problems they've been having this week. What do you make of it all?
Yeah, it's definitely a concern. But what we've seen with new aircraft, the Airbus A380 and the Boeing 787 in particular, is that they're enormously complex machines, and there have been lots of teething pains, lots of glitches. The fire in Boston aboard the Dreamliner was empty of passengers at the time. It's obviously a serious concern. There was during production, during the early days of the program, there was a fire on an aircraft. Earlier, the NTSB's opened a formal investigation. It's obviously a serious concern, but I think most people, most aircraft people, look at this and say that a lot of this is to be expected, and there's nothing that's happened so far that's a showstopper for the program.
And this is new technology. I mean, it's new materials that they're using for these planes.
Yeah, but the new materials have not been involved in any of the glitches. The glitches have been a result of wiring, a result of the auxiliary power unit in the case of the fires, and batteries, things like that. The new materials, the composite structure of the airplane, that's not come into question. Seems to be doing okay. The Airbus A380, the super jumbo wide body, it had an engine trouble early on, as has the Dreamliner. Different engine episodes, but the A380 also had cracks that were serious concern. They had to do some changes to take care of that. And so, you know, as these things get out there and fly, and with, you know, millions of miles of wiring inside and all kinds of new design in the structure, there are going to be kinks to work out.
Well, and this is some of the good news here. This is looking at a headline that you wrote on December 31st, 2012, the safest year ever for airline passengers.
Yeah, it really was, and it's really quite remarkable. There hasn't been a major crash in the United States for some years. The crashes that we did see last year were very few involving Western-built aircraft. The industry as a whole, which, you know, for a long time has had a very good safety record, really has ratcheted up. And I think it's a combination of some better training, better equipment, and more focus on safety.
Well, as you've written, the airline industry is starting to make some money and actually starting to invest some of that money into the flying experience. What can we expect this year?
Oh, I think there are going to be a lot of changes this year. We can certainly expect more Wi-Fi aboard airplanes.
Yay.
Airlines are pushing that pretty hard, yeah. I think one of the more exciting aspects is that airlines are going to start flying lie-flat beds on transcontinental trips, starting with New York, Los Angeles. But, you know, if it gets popular, it'll likely spread. Where, you know, if you're taking a red eye back from the West Coast and you can afford the seat, then the prospect of having a flat bed to get a few hours sleep on is pretty enticing. Those have been extremely popular on international trips, and so it's exciting to see them come to domestic routes as well.
How about for those of us in steerage? Can we expect beds on our flights?
No, absolutely not.
Fair enough.
And
just
that's, you know, those of us in steerage, it's really going to be more of the same. There may be a few more fees. There may be some airlines experimenting with different ways to price coach tickets. There's certainly it's going to be more opportunity to buy up a little bit to more legroom. United's been doing this for a while. Delta's really pushed it hard. Now American's going to come in with more legroom seats. So, you know, there are some opportunities to upgrade your flying experience without having to spend hundreds or thousands of dollars more. But if you're not doing that and you're in the back of the airplane, it's still going to be pretty miserable.
Well, I think we can all relate to that. How about upgrading the screening process? Based on some of the things you've been writing, it looks like the TSA wants to make that smoother and better.
Yeah, the TSA's, they have a tough job, and everybody loves to hate the TSA, and you know, there's certainly been lots of reasons for that in the past. I think they're really trying hard now to make improvements, and one of the things they're going to do this year is really push enrollment for the Trusted Traveler program. It's called PreCheck, and it's really great. People who travel a lot have loved the global entry program that Customs and Border Protection has been doing. Instead of waiting in the long line when you come back into the country, you just go to the kiosk and answer a few questions and put your fingerprints in because you've been pre-screened and you're on your way. It's fantastic. Costs $100 for 5 years. And that also gets you into the PreCheck program. And PreCheck is old-fashioned screening. You leave your shoes on. You walk through a metal detector,
wow,
not the body scanner. You leave your liquids in your bag, your laptop in your bag. When you get it, it's great. It's underutilized right now, and so TSA is going to roll out some ways this year to make it easier to get in the program, perhaps cheaper to get in the program, and really kind of encourage more people to go through the screening process and become a, quote, trusted traveler.
How about the boarding of the airplane? That seems to be where the system breaks down, and obviously people are getting on board and they're shoving their suitcases in the overhead compartments, but is there any progress on making that a smoother experience?
You know, it's a real problem, and it's a problem airlines have created because they, you know, there was always sort of a class system on airplanes, but but now you can get a credit card that gets you into the first boarding group, or you can buy your way into the first boarding group. And because of the shortage of overhead bin space, and because of bag fees, everybody wants to take more stuff on board for free. The importance of getting in an early boarding group is huge. Because otherwise there may not be room for your bag, and it's going to be checked, and it's a hassle, and it may get lost, and people hate it. So the pushing and shoving at the gate, the paying up to get into, simply to board the airplane earlier, even though you're not going to get to where you're going any earlier, it's really kind of remarkable. I was with the CEO of United Airlines who admitted that boarding one of his airplanes, he likened it to getting on a bus in Calcutta.
Oh, Lord.
It's United's going to try and roll out a new boarding system this year, but they got a lot of work ahead of them. One of the things United's done is to board a 757, they've now increased the boarding time when they start boarding people to 45 minutes. So 182 people, and it's now taking them 45 minutes to get them on board. It's really kind of ridiculous.
Where are you going to go this year? Do you have plans yet?
You know, I go all over. Wherever stories, I try and make sure I get some international trips in to see what's going on abroad. Try and fly a lot of different airlines. It's a real mixture, and just kind of go where stories are.
Well, then, looking last year, 2012, was there a top trip for you?
Oh, a couple. I'm a bit of a glutton for punishment. One of the fun things I did last year was fun for me. Everybody else thought it was crazy. Was finding the longest, in terms of time, the longest flight with coach seating, and that turned out to be 16 hours from Sydney, Australia, to Dallas, Fort Worth.
Wow.
Qantas had put in a 747 with extra fuel tanks, and really stretched the limits of that flight. Even our own corporate booking people, when I book this, and they don't like to spend a lot of money, as most corporate booking departments tend to be, and they said, you can do business class on this. So, no, I have to be in coach.
And we only have 5 or 10 seconds. And how was that experience?
It wasn't bad. They did a lot of things to make it better. I particularly remember this mango frozen ice treat that they brought out several times to sort of rehydrate you. It was a nice touch.
Well, Scott McCartney, thank you so much for joining us today in Radio Times.
Good to be with you.
And he covers the airline industry for the Wall Street Journal. Don George, waiting in the wings. We'll be talking about traveling in 2013. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
The Kimmel Center supports WHYY and presents organist Isabel Demers on Saturday, January 19th in Verizon Hall. Known as one of North America's virtuosic concert organists, Demers will perform works by Bach, Mendelssohn, and Reger, plus excerpts from her own transcription of Tchaikovsky's Sleeping Beauty. The performance also features a pre-concert lecture with Isabel Demers and Michael Barone, host of American Public Media's Pipe Dreams. Tickets available at KimmelCenter.org.
This week on This American Life.
You know how every business has a mission statement? That's what I wanted. Like, you were Daryl Watson. You were born on this day. This is your purpose. This is how you're going to do it.
For the new year, stories of people making resolutions that are so big you can't even call them resolutions, including this guy.
I thought, why aren't more people giving away everything that they own and walking across the country?
And an entire country deciding to start over from scratch. It's this week.
Tonight at 9 on WHYY.
President Abraham Lincoln signed the Emancipation Proclamation 150 years ago, but it didn't free all the slaves, and it didn't go over that well with a lot of people in the North either. Now, a century and a half later, there's still debate about just what it did do and why Lincoln signed it. We'll tell you more about it next time on Tell Me More.
This afternoon at 1 on WHYY.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscoane, and this is getting to be a habit. We call Don George if we've been buried by a snowstorm, or we have a bad case of cabin fever, or like today, it's the middle of the winter and we're getting sick of the cold days and long dark nights, and we want to take a trip. Don George is a travel writer, features editor at Gadling.com. He's been the global travel editor for Lonely Planet Publications, founder and editor of Salon.com's travel site Wanderlust, travel editor at the San Francisco Examiner and Chronicle, editor and author of numerous books, including most recently Better Than Fiction, a collection of original travel stories told by some of the world's best novelists. Don George, you are now the Radio Times travel therapist, and nice to have you back with us on Radio Times.
I am so honored to take on that position.
I feel better already. What can I say? Well, I just said goodbye to Scott McCartney. He was talking about airline travel. You're someone that spends a lot of time in an airplane. Would you say that experience is getting better?
Oh, no.
Oh, no. Oh, dear. Okay.
I mean, it's not getting worse, I don't think. But if you hearken back, as I do, to the days when they actually served meals on planes and sort of the check-in process was easier, it is not getting better, I would say. But it's stabilized. It's stabilized, and I think that people's attitudes have probably gotten generally better, and they know better what they're getting into these days when they travel by air, and so they're more prepared. And I see people taking their shoes off in advance when they go through the scanners and those sorts of things. So I think that people are more prepared for it and generally traveling better. So that makes the whole experience a little bit more pleasant.
I don't know if you're in the advice business. I mean, do you think there's something that the industry could do to make that a better experience? Or this is just when you have so many people trying to get into a long, thin tube?
Well, I mean, I think there are things that the industry could do, but because of the economics, they're reluctant to do any kind of little niceties for passengers that would probably make things a lot happier for passengers. I mean, even some of the flights give out little tiny, you know, even now packets of nuts or something or little cookies or something like that. I think that would go a long way towards making people a little bit happier. But even little gestures like that, I don't think in the big picture there's a whole lot that can be done at this time. It would be great if, as Scott was saying, if TSA ramped up some of its programs that would kind of diversify the ways that people go through getting on board. That would be really terrific, I think, if more people signed up for the frequent flyer type programs to go through different lines. That would be nice.
Indeed.
We'll see.
Well, yeah, we'll see. I do want to talk about some of the trips that you took in 2012 and that you have written about, but I also want to make sure our listeners give us a call at 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. If you are looking for a place to go, this is the place to call. Don, you wrote about some really good trips that you took this year, including a trip back to the Côte d'Azur.
Mm-hmm.
And I hear that, and you said that you had the best bouillabaisse in your life while at the Côte d'Azur?
I did. I had a wonderful bouillabaisse in Marseille. And it was kind of Marseille, I didn't know what to expect. I'd never been there before. And Marseille is it's one of the European capitals of culture this year. So I think they're going to be getting a lot of visitors probably. And it's a really fascinating, robust, rich, vital port city, and there's a lot going on there. And the bouillabaisse I had was at a harbor front restaurant, the Miramar, right on the water, literally a 1 minute walk from the fishing pier where a lot of the fish were for sale. So that was really quite a wonderful experience. I'd never had bouillabaisse as delicious as that, and it just kind of, the Côte d'Azur as a whole is one of my favorite places on earth, and I loved being there in Nice and Saint-Tropez and Saint-Paul-de-Vence, and there's just such a celebration of light and art and aesthetics, landscape enjoyment, and it all comes together for me. It's the good life made palpable there.
Well, you also describe, and I have to say, one of the reasons I love to travel is I love to eat and to eat while I travel. You described a birthday feast where it sounds like you ate very, very well.
Oh my goodness, that was the lunch of the year, a place called La Verdoyante, in a little tiny village just off the coast, 2.5 miles, I think, off the coast. And it was one of these terrace restaurants where you look out on rolling green fields and vineyards, these, you know, sun umbrellas. So it's a sun-modeled sort of terrace, like in a Renoir painting, and fantastic service, really wonderfully fresh food made with local ingredients, chèvre from a farm over the hill, fresh-caught fish that had been just brought in that morning from the port. And it was just one of those combination lunches where you, fantastic friends, amazing food, best setting you can imagine, great service. It all just kind of came together. It was truly one of the most memorable meals I've ever had. A great way to celebrate a birthday.
I noticed in some of the trips that you wrote about in 2012, you were going back to places where you had been years ago or on previous trips. Right. Is that just to sort of see how things have changed or to reconnect with some of those good experiences?
Both. And I'm always wondering where are the great places to go, and it seems clear that if a place has really been wonderful in the past, I should go check it out again and see if it's still wonderful. And I do also love reconnecting with the me who was there 20 years ago or 10 years ago and sort of seeing how I've changed, too. And, you know, when we travel, it's not just the places that change, it's we who change as well. And so that's always interesting to see how that conjunction occurs now. And I found that in Nice, I had fallen in love with it before, 20 years ago, 40 years ago, and I fell in love with it all over again. It's a new me, new old me, falling in love with new old Nice, and it makes for a really marvelously multi-layered experience, and it so makes me so happy to know that I can reconnect with myself and that the qualities that I loved in that place before are thriving and still being nurtured and cultivated and still abundant today. That was really great.
Are there places that, and I almost hate to use the word hot spots, but are there places that there seems to be some growing interest in visiting?
Yes, absolutely. I think, Sri Lanka is certainly one. Sri Lanka for a long time was kind of off limits because of civil war and people just didn't want to take the risk of traveling there. That's all, the civil war has been settled, peace is reigning, it's a gem of an island, and I think a lot of people are going to be traveling there this year. I think Montenegro is a great up-and-coming European destination. I expect that it will be kind of the new Croatia. There's always a new something.
Yes, exactly.
And Croatia was the hot spot a few years ago, and it's still a wonderful place to go, but more tourists have discovered it, and the prices have crept up, and now Montenegro, basically the same geographic region, lots of the same attractions, seems poised to take over as the next one. So those are a couple. And then I think among traditional destinations, New Zealand continues to be really a popular place to go. There's just such a diversity of attractions there. And I think that Colombia in South America is probably poised to take off, too, because its problems are settling down. The tourism infrastructure is growing. So they're in good shape. And I think Peru, which has been pretty popular, is just expanding in popularity. I was there a couple of years ago and just loved it, the people, the cuisine, the monuments. So those are a few hot spots that I think will take off this year.
Well, it's interesting. You mentioning Sri Lanka and the problems that they had inside that country, and I think you can look at the world and you think, oh my gosh, you look at Europe and they have this, you know, Euro crisis. You look in the Middle East and it seems a very unsettled part of the world, and it can scare people away from going to places that may be better and safer than they think.
Well, absolutely. I've had that experience all my life where I lived in Greece many years ago when there were riots happening basically every week outside the U.S. Embassy, and people in the United States were so worried about me, they thought my life was in danger, but in fact the demonstrations were very orderly. They took place every Wednesday outside the U.S. Embassy from 9 to 11. You kind of knew that was happening, and if you lived in Athens, you just stayed away from the U.S. Embassy Wednesday from 9 to 11, and you were totally fine, but it got all the news coverage, and so people thought all of Athens was in flames, kind of. And that tends to be something that happens around the world. There are places that have isolated pockets of problems, and we tend to think that the whole country is in trouble. And In fact, the country probably is so grateful to have tourists that you're treated really, really well when you go there. I'm thinking of trying to visit Greece this year because they've had so many problems, and I love Greece, and I would like to support them as a traveler, and I also suspect that the places that are normally crammed with tourists won't be as crammed with tourists right now because of the problems they've been having. And so, in lots of ways, it can be a very good time to go to a place that's in the news because of problems there, as long as you're wise and do your research and make sure you're not putting yourself in harm's way. But there's lots of places to go in countries that have isolated pockets of problems where you can have a wonderful experience.
And that's Don George, our guest today on Radio Times. He's travel writer and features editor at Gadling.com, has spent pretty much his whole life traveling and writing about it. And we call him up from time to time when we have that sense that we want to get the heck out of here and go someplace. Give us a call at 1-888-477-9499. If you have a recommendation of a place to visit or if you have a question about where to go, again, give us a call at 1-888-477-WHYY. You had mentioned Greece, Don, and you wrote a really beautiful piece about sometimes when you're driving in a car and you get this feeling of what the sunlight looks like as it filters through and it takes you back to this little taverna, as you describe it, in not far from Athens, and a young and beautiful and mysterious woman you had fallen in love with, a woman named Gisela. This is 1976. And then you go on to describe just all the wonderful memories associated with, I guess, that her, that place, and that time as well.
Right. That every spring it comes back to me. You have these experiences when you travel, especially I was just out of college back then and young and incredibly impressionable and fell in love with Greece and Gisela and the whole everything. And it's, you know, it's a memory that I cherish, and it's become an integral part of what I think of Greece now. It's sitting at a table at a taverna looking out on the water with the pine trees above you and a waiter shuffling out with a tray laden with some wonderful little cheese and some bread and some Greek salad, and just sitting there and savoring the scene and savoring the atmosphere of being in antiquity and being in love and having it all sort of come together for you. And nice. Whenever I think of Greece now, I think of that. And of course, there's a very vibrant part of modern-day Greece, too, that I also think of. But I like that the travel becomes kind of a layered experience after a while, almost an archaeological experience. And you go back to places, and you rediscover the riches that are there, and then you find new riches that are there on the top level also. And that, for me, is why I feel so blessed to have made a life as a travel writer, because it just accumulates and accumulates, and it kind of just gets better and better.
And what happened to Gisela?
I've often wondered that. I don't know. I went my way, and she went her way, and we never, ever reconnected. I don't remember her last name. So if I Google Gisela, I'm not sure that will be helpful.
let me see what looks like Keely from Newark, Delaware has to say. And Keely, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Hi, I am going to Nicaragua in about 2 weeks. I visited Managua briefly this summer, and I'm going for at least a couple months. I actually have a one-way ticket.
Wow.
So I just wanted to know if you could talk a little bit about any experiences you've had in Central America, I mean specifically Nicaragua, and anything that is absolutely necessary to see and any insights you could offer.
And Keely, let me ask you a question. Why are you going, and why do you have a one-way ticket?
Well, I graduated in May from the University of New Orleans, and I had a job in the city for several months, and then I decided I wanted to go other places. So I've been part of that large group of unemployed recent graduates living at home with my family, and I had an opportunity to work with a nonprofit in their hostel, which is about an hour and a half north of Managua. So I'm going because I'm really trying to work on my Spanish and just not live in the States for a while.
Oh, good for you. Well, Don, what do you suggest?
That's fantastic. First of all, I heartily commend you. I did the same thing when I graduated. I lived abroad for 3 years, and it really, really opened up my sense of the world and the possibilities and what it means to be a global citizen and all of that. So that's really great. I've never been to Nicaragua, so you're ahead of me there. and I don't have any particular recommendations that I can make, but generally I would say that one thing that I think people don't take enough advantage of is just the local people's opinions about where you should go and what you should do. It's great to get a guidebook, and it's great to read up and do as much research as you can before you get there. But when you're on the ground, I usually rely on what local people have to tell me. And they can tell you which neighborhoods are okay and which aren't, and they can tell you that there's a festival in the next town over that you didn't know about. And so I would definitely rely on that. I would certainly work on the Spanish, because, you know, the more you can speak the local language, the more insights you'll get and the more you'll open the country up to you. And I'd also just cultivate, there's that very fine line for travelers about vulnerability and when to be vulnerable and when not to. And in my life, mostly trusting people and taking some risks and allowing the world to sort of open up before me has paid off. So listen to your gut and don't do anything crazy, but take a few steps that allow mm-hmm. the place to really open up for you. And I think if you listen to your heart, that will open up opportunities that you just be really open to people and follow their advice, and you'll have an amazing life-changing experience.
Now, Kelly, have a great time. Let me get Susanna from Center City, Philadelphia to join us on Radio Time. Susanna, go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi. I just wanted to mention a country that very few people speak about because they always talk about it in a negative way, and that's Guatemala, and specifically Lake Atitlan, where I spent almost a decade. Mm. Absolutely gorgeous area, and lots of people from not just the Mayans and the Latinos, but international community. People from all over the world travel there and live there, sometimes full-time, sometimes part-time. And it is gorgeous, just beautiful. And in terms of energy, some people claim it has even nicer energy than Sedona.
Oh, so interesting.
I just thought I would like to mention that.
And Susanna, we're almost up on a break here, but how did you get to live there for a decade?
Oh, my former partner wanted to retire, and we went to Costa Rica, and Costa Rica is not the place to retire. It's a beautiful country to visit, but to retire there, it was really boring, and the people weren't as friendly. They preferred you to stay in hotels, and everybody told us we had to visit Panajachel on the shores of Lake Atitlan. Mm. And there are lots of villages around the lake. It's not just Panajachel. And those places are wonderful to visit and also to live there. It's a great place to retire, no matter what age you are.
Well, I appreciate the call to Radio Time. Susanna, thank you so much. We're going to take a very short break, get back to our conversation with Don George, and open up the lines. We want to hear from you, either suggestions of places to visit or questions for our guest, Don George. And again, that phone number is 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Westtown School supports WHYY. Founded in 1799, Westtown invites students pre-K through grade 12 to pursue a life-size education. One that helps to prepare each student for what comes next, not only for college and career, but for a whole life. You can learn more by attending Westtown's Open House on Saturday, January 12th at 10 a.m. Details about Westtown's Open House on January 12th available at westtown.edu. Westtown School, a life-size education.
On the next Fresh Air, Bobby Cannavale. He's starring opposite Al Pacino in the Broadway revival of Glengarry Glen Ross. On HBO's Boardwalk Empire, he played the sadistic and masochistic gangster Gyp Rossetti, who Cannavale describes as needing to feel stimulated all the time.
And so he does that by making a joke that scares somebody that doesn't know it's a joke.
Join us
this afternoon at 3 and again tonight at 7 on WHYY.
I'm Robin Young. Join us next time for the news and these stories here and now. A lot of cheese is stored in caves. Kraft keeps its cheese in a mine in Missouri. We'll explore the network of massive refrigerators that keep our food fresh from farm to fridge. Also, the critic's darling, Indie Band Yola Tengo. That's Public Radio's Daily Digest of News and Culture here and now.
Today at noon on WHYY.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I was getting ahead of myself there. I'm Marty Moscowane talking with Don George. He's travel writer, features editor at Gadling.com, and he joins us from time to time to talk about some of the trips that he has taken and also to take your questions and comments at 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. Don, you mentioned Peru as a place to visit. We got an email from Barbara saying, any travel tips for a woman traveling alone to Peru? I'll be flying to Lima and then taking another flight to Cusco.
Well, I've never traveled as a woman alone to Peru, unfortunately. but from what I understand from intrepid travelers I know who are women who travel alone, it's a very safe place to travel. And people are generally very respectful of solo women travelers. And I found that I was traveling solo and people were incredibly kind to me and very, very friendly. I think it's probably a really great place to travel as a solo woman traveler. And Cusco is an amazing, amazing cosmopolitan city, town. So that's a great place to be.
Barbara, thanks for that email. And again, you can call us at 1-888-477-9499. Don, you talked about a trip to, or you wrote about a trip to Easter Island. Why did you want to go there?
Boy, when I was young, I saw those iconic photos of those big stone statues, those big sort of enigmatic faces. And ever since then, years and years and years, I've wanted one day to get there. And it's just so incredibly remote. It's kind of hard to get to Easter Island. It's really, truly in the middle of nowhere. It's the most isolated inhabited island on the planet, I learned when I was there. But it stuck in my mind forever. I wanted to see those statues in person, and it was truly a magical, amazing experience to go there. Definitely worth it for anybody, I would say, once in a lifetime at least, to go to Easter Island. It was entirely magical and thrilling and one of the best trips of my life.
In fact, you describe, I'm not sure if the word is communing, but spending some time with those statues and having what's, at least as you wrote about it, felt like a mystical experience.
It was quite mystical. I decided there's the most spectacular group of the Moai, the statues, are there's a group of 15 that are set up right by the seaside and in a place called Ahu Tongariki, and I decided to go there before dawn. I had a car just drop me there before dawn, and I stumbled through the darkness towards these towering, hulking figures that I knew were there, but I couldn't even see. And I actually sensed their presence before I could see them. I literally, the hair on my arms just stood on end. There was some sort of magnetic power. And the Rapa Nui people, the indigenous people, called it mana, and this kind of spirit power, and I could really feel it, and I almost felt like I was magnetically being pulled towards these statues, and then suddenly one of them like leaped into silhouette against the stars in front of me, and it was truly an exhilarating sort of magical, mystical experience. I felt their power, the power of hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of years that they'd accumulated in the air all around me. It was really a singular experience.
That must be a unique kind of darkness, too.
It really is. I mean, it's there are no lights. I mean, there's so few, electrical lights on Easter Island. You're truly in the middle of nowhere, and so it's the darkest dark I've ever experienced. Wow. I think there's no light, and the light is the stars, and the stars are there. More stars, and they're more layered than I've ever seen anywhere else in my life, and there's this canopy of stars above you, and that's really it. And so it was an inky blackness, and it made the silhouette of the figure, the Moai, even more startling and amazing.
Let me see what Michelle from Newark, Delaware has to say. Michelle, go ahead. You're on Radio Times. Do we have Michelle? That would be, I think we might have just lost Michelle. We will get her lined up, and we'll get some other callers lined up as well as 1-888-477-9499. Don, let me ask you about, and this is a discussion I've had with friends who also love to travel, as I do with my husband and my family, which is when you go to a poor country, and we have done that, the difficulties of sort of navigating through the experience of being there and wanting to obviously enjoy yourself and enjoy the culture, but also feeling that we're sort of outside of it and feeling uncomfortable that we have money and that they don't. I wonder how you have wrestled with that. I'm almost embarrassed to talk about this on the air, but it's been a topic of discussion among some of my friends.
Oh, I think it's a great thing to talk about on air. I'm happy that you brought it up. And certainly for me as a lifetime traveler, I've been in lots of poor places. And of course, poverty is a really relative term.
Sure.
Oftentimes, those people seem to be a lot happier than people I know who have a lot more material possessions. But your sense of perspective gets so skewed when you realize that the $5 you spend on a latte and a croissant could pay for a day or a week, or it really kind of throws out of whack your compass about economic things. And so I try to be incredibly respectful. I try not to dress in any ostentatious way. I try to really understand the ways of the local people. I don't normally give money to beggars. I think that's not really a good idea. I think it just encourages more begging, and that really you need to give money to organizations on the ground that try to help people rather than sort of foster this culture of begging. But I think it's really mostly about being respectful and open and genuinely interested in the local culture and in engaging with the local people. And people everywhere I've found are so common, and they have so many similarities. And people love it when you come from out of outer space, kind of, and drop into their culture and are really appreciative of what they do in their everyday life. And that's what I like to do, is hang out with people and get a sense for what their daily rhythms and rites and routines are, and show them that means a lot to me and that I really appreciate that. And that seems to be a greater gift than even a material gift in a lot of ways, that seems to be something that really resonates with people, and that they end up giving a lot back to me spiritually because of that. And so that's how I try to navigate, with respect and honor and a sense of great interest and curiosity and appreciation about the place I am, wherever I am.
Let me try Betsy from looks like Princeton Junction. Betsy, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Hi.
Hi,
I would
there.
Love some ideas on where to take 14-year-old teenagers next summer. They've traveled a bit. They loved staying in the gîte in France in the countryside, I think more than being in Paris, for example. Mm. And they're learning Spanish. It's hard to get them excited ahead of time about helping pick a place to go. And we've considered Costa Rica. They loved Yellowstone last year because they were unplugged and active. And what do you think?
Yeah, what do you think, Don George?
My number one top family destination in the world is the Galapagos Islands. I would absolutely think about bringing them there. I took my kids, I have two kids, and I took them there when they were, I think, 9 and 14, and it was the trip of our lifetime. It sort of introduced them to an alternate universe, an amazingly pristine place where all the animals get to sort of cooperatively live together. And for a family, it was just so amazing to share these experiences every day and bond over them. And my daughter became a sea lion one day, basically, and she's bonded with the sea lions and spent an hour with them flip-flopping and somersaulting. And to watch your kids blossom before your eyes, and to watch the world sort of blossom before your eyes together like that to me is the best family destination. So I'd really highly recommend that.
Sounds like fun. Betsy, thanks for calling into Radio Times. Let's try Michelle again. And Michelle is calling us from Newark, Delaware. Go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Hi,
hi there.
This is Michelle from Newark.
Sure.
I wanted to recommend to go to the Isles of Scilly. And Scilly is spelled S-C-I-L-L-Y. It's off of the coast of Cornwall in Great Britain. You do need to take a ferry to get there. And it's subtropical. Many people wouldn't expect to find palm trees,
wow,
migrating birds, and that type of thing. It's just beautiful, so I certainly recommend that.
Oh, that sounds great. A subtropical island off the coast of Cornwall, England. Don George, have you been there?
I've not been to Scilly. No, I would love to go there. I have heard other people who've been there. I've met people who say it's really, really wonderful. So That sounds good.
That's great, Michelle. Thanks for calling in, and thanks for calling back as well. And again, you can call us at 1-888-477-9499. Talking with Don George about travel. Don, I know you're going to be leading a group in ancient Japan. Have you ever been a group leader before?
I've led one small private group before, but it was two people, and so this is this is a bigger group. This is going to be a maximum nine people group, and it's to a part of Japan that is my favorite place in the world, basically Kyoto, and then the island of Shikoku, which is actually where my wife is from, and a little visited island. It's the smallest of the four main Japanese islands, and it's really pristine. And old Japan thrives there, and it's a place of outdoor hot springs and temples and preserved 300-year-old farmhouses where we're going to stay on this trip. And I'm incredibly excited about it. And I'm excited about, as a trip leader, introducing people to something I love so much and that's such a interwoven part of my own life, just kind of trying to pass that love for the place and appreciation for the place on to people is really, really exciting for me. So I'm tremendously excited about that. And there are a couple of places still open, Marty, if you want to come.
Oh, don't tempt me, Don George, travel therapist for Radio Times. But how do you prep for something like this? I'm not trying to be a wet blanket here, but group dynamics can be an interesting thing to try to deal with, especially among strangers.
They are. I mean, they certainly, definitely are. And I think a good trip leader has to be part psychologist as well as part historian and cultural anthropologist and culinary expert and all those other things. I love people, so I'm really looking forward to the group dynamics and the way that I know that the best part of that is that people enrich each other's experience. So one person will say, wow, look at that. Look at the way that temple curves up at the corner there. And, oh, look at the face on that temple guardian. And, oh, wow, look at the cherry trees in blossom over there. And so I think that you can cultivate and nourish the best of people in a group setting like that and actually enhance everybody's experience if you do it right. And I'm excited about that. And I'm excited about how different people enrich my experience of a place. I know when I travel with my kids, they always show me things that I never otherwise would have seen. I hope and expect that that will happen on this group trip as well, that people will bring different passions, and that'll help us all. That'll sort of enrich the experience for all of us.
Let me see what Roz from Paoli has to say. Roz, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call.
You're very welcome.
My question is also a family vacation, but with adult children, in August. That's our limitation. We need to do it in August. And for a week, we're thinking about the Portland area. And I wondered if you had any other suggestions or could add to that idea.
What do you think, Don George?
Portland's great. There's a lot to do in Portland itself, and then there's a lot outside of Portland. I happen to live in San Francisco, and so I'm very partial to the Bay Area, so I would just throw that up as an alternative. There's a real richness of things to do in San Francisco, and there's the wine country, which is beautiful and educational. There's the mountains in the Sierra Nevada. So I do think that the Bay Area offers a really huge difference of family activities that you can do also, and great museums here. So Portland is great. I would say San Francisco would be another one to consider, but either way, you'll have a wonderful experience.
And lots of fun in between those two cities as well.
That's true.
Roz, thanks for the call. Let's see what Nora from North Philadelphia has to say. Nora, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Hi. I've lived abroad all my life. I've also lived in Greece. Yeah, Sudan. I'm going to be moving, hopefully, if I get the job, to Western Sahara on the borders of Morocco. And I was wondering if you've ever been in that region at the Sahara Desert, if it's safe, if I need to look out for anything.
Nora, thanks for the call. John, I'm going to give you about a minute to give her an answer.
Okay, well, I've been in the Sahara region. I think it's safe. I would do a lot of research before you go. You can definitely look at guidebooks and check out different governments' warnings about that whole region. Morocco, I think, is very, very safe and quite wonderful. But I would just keep my ears and eyes open and talk to local people about what's safe and what's not safe. But I think you should have an amazing experience there. I know a solo woman traveler who spent about a month there not that long ago and said the people were incredibly hospitable and she had a wonderful experience. So good luck to you. I think that should be wonderful.
That sounds great, Nora. Thanks so much for calling into Radio Times. And Don George, thank you as always for joining us in Radio Times.
Oh, my pleasure, and I hope I've inspired you to hit the road.
Of course you have. That's why we have you on the show. Don George, travel writer, features editor at Gadling.com. Well, we do want to close things out with Frank Sinatra singing Tom Adair and Matt Dennis's tune, Let's Get Away From It All. Kevin Griffin, the engineer for today's edition of Radio Times, our thanks to Joyce Lieberman and to Julian Hertzfeld for their work getting our phone system up and running.
Let's take a boat to Bermuda. Let's take a plane to St. Paul. Let's grab a kayak, Quincy or Nye. Let's get away from it all. Let's take a trip in a trailer. No need to come back at all. Let's take a powder to Boston for chowder. Let's get away from it all. We'll travel around from town to town. We'll visit every state. I repeat, I love you, sweet, in all the 48. Let's go again to Niagara. This time we'll peek at the fall. Let's leave our hut, dear, get out of our rut, dear. Let's get away from it all.